Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Inside to Cohen, still in the centre circle this time inside the Charlton half, and the ball forward, is it going to be onside? Is Yarmolenko, it's a ball across, easy touched in by Haller, but the Charlton back four up in arms that Yarmolenko had to be offside, but nothing from the assistant on this near side.
Backwards to Yarmolenko, he's got two out left, and one of them is Snodgrass, who controls. Snodgrass crossed an opportunity, swings towards the back post. Haller with a header, and it's 2-0. Charlton couldn't do anything about that. A lovely ball in from Snodgrass. Haller at the back post just peeled off Perrington and heads beyond Amos to give West Ham a two-goal lead.
Forward from West Ham trying to catch Lanzini's run, and he's got there into the edge of the penalty area up against Barker. Cuts one way, then the other. Barker, Oshelaja's there. Oh, ball across to Anderson. Simple enough to finish it to the left of Amos, because both Oshelaja and Barker were trying to take the ball off Lanzini. Left Anderson all on his own, roughly around the penalty spot, and he's buried his chance. Swung towards Haller, but that's gone too far and above him and out for a Charlton throw on his opposite side, and this near side effect. And there is the final whistle. That was the last action of the second round Carabao Cup tie. It's finished with West Ham United 3, Charlton Athletic 0, but it doesn't tell the full story of this game at all. Charlton had their chances, noticeably from in the second half, especially from Anike Williams. And it's a scoreline that doesn't reflect, I think, the performance and the effort that the Charlton side put in.
So, good evening and welcome to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview. My name is Louis Mendes. We'll be looking back at the Cup game at West Ham. You just heard the goals from it there. We'll also be discussing on this week's show the fact that Paul Elliott has been granted an injunction to prevent the sale from ESI to anyone else of the club. Just another spanner thrown into the works. We'll also look ahead to the game with Doncaster and look back at that game in more detail with West Ham on this week's show. So joining me to do just that, first up, he's back from sunny Spain. Great to have you back in the country. Nathan Muller, how you doing, Nath?
How's it going, boys?
Yeah,
how's it going?
Not bad. You were out there for like 2 months. You must have one hell of a tan.
I've sent you the white bits already, but... don't laugh. You laughed earlier. It's good to be back. I've tried keeping up with the news today, but yeah, it's nice to be back and seeing everything back in the circus. Really, seeing it all kicking off.
Yeah, it has been tough keeping up with everything that's going on in the courts. And I should have mentioned actually at the top of the show, we've got Benji Nurek, journalist who's been covering the club recently. He was online for that court session. We're going to hear from him in a few seconds' time. He'll explain a little bit more about what actually went on in that courtroom today. Also joining us on the phone, Mr. Tom Wallin. How you doing, Tom?
Not bad, thank you.
How's your white bits?
Better than Nath's. Yeah, I didn't realise that's what that photo was. It was a bit confusing when it came through, but that makes sense now.
Yeah, well, haunting photograph. And also joining us here is Mr. Lewis Cat. How you doing, Lou?
Yeah, good, mate. Thank you. A bit put off now thinking about everybody's white bits. I don't know why that's the head of the show at the moment. White bits everywhere.
Yeah, I think we're all desperately trying to think of something less horrific than the running of Charlton Athletic Football Club. And at the moment, Nathan's white bits are the only thing that we can concentrate on. Well, it's good to have all of you chaps on the show. So like I said, today, the appeal was finally heard between Paul Elliott and ESI One, for want of better phrases. This was the appeal of the decision not to award the injunction to Paul Elliott to prevent the sale of the club to anyone. Obviously, Tom Sangard, the main man in that picture. But today, the appeal was heard, and unfortunately, if you're a Charlton fan, it would seem, because it adds another layer of complexity to the case, is the appeal was granted, and an injunction has been granted now, preventing the sale of the club until this trial now to go on in November to decide who actually owns the club to sell it in the first place. Obviously, that means that currently the transfer window will close in October, so that means if this does drag on that long, there will be no transfers. Unfortunately, for Charlton, will remain under the embargo in the situation we are in. Obviously, there is this rumour still going round that maybe Thomas Sangard has some sort of loophole and will find some way out of this situation without it dragging on that long. In fact, he even told Richard Corley that he's working with some smart people to figure out how we can make that happen, as in the sale of the club, without dealing with certain people. And he's going to be at the game against Doncaster on Saturday. So maybe there's something going on in the background. But on the face of it, today's news was very bad news for Charlton supporters. So as I said earlier, I spoke to Benji Nurick, a journalist who's back in the country now covering the club. He was in the court hearing this afternoon, and I asked him just to tell me a little bit more about what he understood happened during the court hearing.
Obviously, today was not the first court proceeding between Lex Dominus and Panorama Magic to decide what's going to happen next with Charlton Athletic. The first one, obviously, September 1st, and that one saw Lex Dominus's attempt to get an injunction denied, but then they had the right, they were given a week the next day to appeal, and now they've had their appeal, and they've been granted the injunction on appeal, until a trial, which will be commencing supposedly on the week of November 23rd. So what this means, in at least in the eyes of the judgment today, is that Charlton Athletic can't be sold, or the East Street Investments can't sell the shares that they own in Charlton Athletic to a third party until a trial decides who owns the football club. And obviously, we don't know what that means yet for a Thomas Sangard potential takeover. There's obviously rumors going around Twitter as normal, but ultimately today's decision means that the club can't be sold until they have the trial.
Yeah, I think we've all been aware of those rumours that Thomas may have somehow found some sort of loophole or some way to get around this. But if he hasn't, this now basically means that the trial's in November, so that means no sale until then, when the transfer window is closed, which is obviously difficult news for Charlton fans. So, I mean, could you sort of give us, because you were in the courtroom today, could you give us maybe an oversight of roughly what the arguments were made that were made by either side today?
So today, obviously, was the appeal. So Paul Chasty went first, representing Lex Dominus, and he essentially went through the entire case, very sort of similar arguments to what we saw last time, except he essentially just called Judge Pierce's decision the wrong decision, and said that there was no evidence that that a third party was about to buy the club. And that was kind of the main sticking point of Chasty's argument, was that nowhere in Marion Mahale's evidence did he provide any evidence that the club was about to, he didn't say anything about the state of play of the third party in terms of buying the club. And so in the eyes of the court, that meant that there wasn't anything oven ready, as they at one point mentioned, which meant that the fate of the club, they felt, was going to be similar regardless, because there was nothing concrete in regards to a third party buying the club. In addition, there was also a big thing of Marion Mahale's initial testimony was that the club was going to face severe consequences, including a points deduction, including possible expulsion from the league. But the fact is, the only consequence that the club has faced so far is the transfer embargo, and obviously things could get a lot worse very quickly, but at the moment the only consequence they've faced so far is the transfer embargo, which of course has been in place since January due to the actions of ESI originally. So that was a big part of Chasey's argument as well. And then obviously Lauren Creamer again represented the side of Panorama Magic and was essentially explaining a lot of attempting to try to refute and sort of fill the gaps that were left out by Mihail's testimony. And so it always, I guess, to me, felt in some ways that she was on the defensive, or that side was on the defensive. And obviously they were trying to get the decision changed, and Lauren Creamer and the side of Panorama Magic was just trying to keep the same decision. So in a way, they were always defending, but it very much felt that she was sort of having to refute everything that was being said by Chasty and by and fill the gaps that were sort of left out by Marion Mihail's testimony, which, I mean, obviously is frustrating that it felt that that Chasty's side was more prepared, or felt that, not necessarily more prepared in sort of a legal standpoint, but felt that they had their bases covered, and it felt that they didn't necessarily have as many holes as there were in Marion Mihail and the general testimony on the side of Lauren Creamer and Panorama Magic. So I think that was very frustrating. And obviously, Lauren Creamer brought up Steve Gallen's testimony, where he talks about how there's a clear link between the football effects of this injunction and the economic effects of the injunction. You know, the team can't bring in players, obviously. The 10 players have left, he said, and only 2 have brought in. I mean, that's a crazy... That's a crazy rate. Most clubs can't properly survive on that, and obviously academy players are being used, and there's a limit on terms of squad spots. So that was an argument that was sort of new today, because Steve Gallen's testimony was only really talked about today. But ultimately, I think what it really came down to is that the court decided that they didn't see any necessary reason that the situation would change whether an injunction was in place or not, and that potentially, I mean, who knows what would have happened had, it's easy to speculate about various different outcomes, but they seem to feel that if something was obvious and if there was clearly a deal in place, then an injunction potentially would have impacted the situation, because then it would have potentially stopped a sale. But they felt that the evidence didn't show that it would impact the club in a huge way. And that obviously is their opinion based on the evidence that they're seeing. But I also think what is frustrating is just that this has sort of hung in the air for a long time, and the EFL have kind of let it just play out. And obviously, I can't say exactly how they should be doing things, because I'm not part of the EFL, but it's frustrating that they let it last 41 days in between the initial rejection of Paul Elliott and Chris Farnell's applications on August 7th. And now, and had Paul Elliott been rejected again, then I think there's really no doubt that they wouldn't have had much case for an injunction. And that was another big argument that Chasty made, and a big argument that I think resonated with the court heavily, both courts, including Judge Pierce's, where obviously Panorama Magic were successful, was that Marion Mihail said that Paul Elliott had failed the EFL's test and therefore couldn't be owner of Charlton Athletic. But that is not necessarily accurate, because Paul Elliott can appeal, and as Chasty said in his testimony, in his argument, Paul Elliott did appeal. So that isn't a finite, concrete thing, and it seemed like it was being called a very concrete, this will happen, in Marion Mihail's testimony, but that just wasn't, the court clearly felt that wasn't the case. And that was a big part of Chasty's argument that wasn't as present in the first, in Judge Pierce's, but still was something that Judge Pierce criticized, and something that Lauren Creamer, in the initial hearing with Judge Pierce, Lauren Creamer actually had to apologize for that specific thing. So I think that was something else that was a big part of Chasty's arguments today.
So thanks very much to Benji for giving us a lowdown there. I mean, it's so complicated, and I've said it on this show quite a few times recently that I didn't come into covering Charlton, you know, as a hobby for, to think I'd have to need a bloody law degree. I only really want to be talking about football, but once again, that's not the case at the top of a Charlton Live show. It feels like very bad news, Tom.
Yeah, it does. And I said when we got relegated, it felt like more than relegation, and that was why it really hurt. And I think it felt like that because there was so much uncertainty about the ownership. We didn't know where things were going. We didn't know what was going to happen to the club. We didn't even know if we were going to have a club the next day. And that's been going on since ESI took over, really. That concern has been there, but we've managed to find a way to kind of battle on. And Boya, beyond all belief, ended up staying. And obviously we've started this season with a couple of wins, and you're just waiting for that break, something to go our way, because it doesn't look like it's going to. And then obviously the other week with the initial hearing, it seemed like things had gone our way, and even Boya referenced it and said, you know, after that Tuesday, I thought everything was done. And then even Thomas Sangard's positive news has just been going on, and he seems to think it's going to be okay. And I think we've all been, and maybe I think this is the word I used on Sunday, that we've all been so desperate for it to happen that you're just clinging on to any part of the good news. And so when the tweets came out that just said the injunction had been granted and what the implications of that are, as you say, I don't have a law degree either. I don't fully understand that bit. But what I do know is that with any form of ESI, Paul Elliott, Farnell, any of these people who've clearly not got any best interests of the club at heart, we're in big trouble. And until that's resolved, I don't see a way out of it for Charlton. And the questions you ask now, if the injunction has been granted and the club can't be sold and the embargo stays, now what does Boya think? Does he reassess? Does Jacko reassess? Players, you'd imagine, if they can't sign, that, you know, we're going to lose out on that. And it's not just about this season. I can accept a mid-table finish if it was just down to that. But what really worries me is the future of the club. And that feels very much up in the air at the moment.
Yeah, Nathan, that's one of the things, I guess, is back to that question that we had a little while ago, is, well, what's the situation now with the money? You know, does the money start to run out? Because, you know, I mean, Richard, again, you mentioned it, there's, you know, you're hoping for sell-ons for players like, I don't know, Carlin Grant or, well, Joe Gomez probably won't move, but players who we may have sell-on agreements for. But if they don't move, or if they don't come in, then how long can the club try and stay self-sufficient with the fact that obviously there's been players who've had their wages deferred and other ways they've been cost-cutting and not spending money recently? How long will that go on before actually we're in big trouble again?
Yeah, I mean, Tom hit it on the head really about having a law degree. I mean, I've made it clear on it. It's just got boring, the whole thing, and just even this, the legal things made it even more confusing. And like you said about the money side of things, he's not even the blooming donut, and even passed. He still ain't passed the owner's director's test, I assume, unless I've missed that. But so it's like, well, how, if he's not fit to run a club, he's still here. We're still going to have the embargo. I just don't really know where it's going to come from. I mean, Thomas has put, you know, he said that he put money in an escrow account. I assume, because I haven't seen it, that Paul Elliott's done anything of the sort. But yeah, if there's no money coming in, especially with, you know, no fans coming in. I mean, I know we've got some fans going on Saturday, but they're already that money's already in the bank, so to speak, really. You ain't going to have any walk-ups, and you might have a little bit of, I don't even know if the food and drink, I doubt that's going to be open. I might be wrong, but even if that's going to be minimal. So like you say, the sustainability is the concern, and I just don't really know where we go from here. And Tom said again, my main concern, which I said last Thursday, was the playing side. If we don't get the players in, which, what was it? I think there was rumours going around of 6 or 7 signing, but I guarantee you they ain't going to wait until November. They've got to look after themselves and make them sustainable as people. So it's worrying. It is worrying, and it's not just about, you know, football's a game and we want to win every game and we want to be competitive. But like Tom said, if you ain't got a club, you ain't going to be playing any games. And I know that sounds really, really negative, but I mean, at the moment, that's the only thing that's going through my head at the moment. So I don't really know where it stands. I know it's, what is it, November or something, but for me now, my next thing is Boya going to stay? Because his hands are tired. It's like, what can he do? But yeah, there's just so many sort of situations and so many concerns that you just want to get it sorted, because it's just been going on for so long. But yeah, it's worrying, mate.
Yeah, well, Bowie has stayed this long, so I mean, don't feel like he's ready to walk away or anything like that. But you are still concerned about what happens next, and you know, Rich has just mentioned the EFL now will not comment. You know, we know that the appeal for Elliott's owners and directors test is still yet to go through. So, you know, are the EFL sort of sitting on their hands waiting to see what happens with this court case before they make that decision, because they don't want to look silly by approving someone who then can't buy the club? And same with Sandgaard. You know, there's so much confusion in terms of that going on, Lewis, that you don't really know what to expect next. And you fear for, you know, it doesn't feel like the people involved in this are that bothered about what happens with the club in the short term, because obviously, like we say, this is now going to drag on beyond the transfer window. So again, if this injunction, you know, if all of a sudden the next court case it's decided that Paul Elliott does own the club, I mean, that doesn't exactly fill you with a warm fuzzy feeling as well, does it?
Well, not at all, especially given the record of people that have failed an owners and directors test is, I think you probably count them on one hand, and I think they all have probably had their application submitted by us. So that alone is a worry. The fact that this court case now is going to drag on, as you say, for another couple of months past the window for new players as well, is when we've got the squad that we do, is a massive concern. And going back to Bowyer, really, I think that's going to be a huge sort of swaying factor as to whether he you know, decides to move on from this, because he said so many a times he's been doing this role with both hands tied behind his back effectively for such a long time, and with all these players set to sign and sort of in the background that they're signing because of Lee Bowyer, and if he can't get those people over the line because of the obstacles that are in our way because of this delay, then there's going to be a real cause for concern, because there's no way that the squad we have at the moment, yes, we have good players on paper, but once you have a couple of injuries, which we know our track record with injuries isn't great anyway, we're going to really struggle to put a side out. And as Nave touched on there, the big concern now is when does it all run out? When, you know, with the money at the moment, we don't know where the funds are coming from to see the club through to the end of this month, even through October as well. There's going to be growing concerns of administration, which will come with a points penalty, which is another hurdle for Lee Bowyer to get over. So it's really concerning at the moment, and I think that something's got to happen, and I think all of us are keeping our fingers crossed that something can be done away from this courtroom drama. But we've said so many times now, I can't see the EFL taking any responsibility for something when it's sort of in other people's hands, and they're not going to want to put their name against something and rubber stamp it if they could be leaving themselves open to sort of legal ridicule and having a case against them from Lex Dominus as well. So there's a hell of a lot to sort of go through at the moment. I feel like you need a law degree to understand what's going on in SE7 these days. And today was a real blow for all of us. And all we can hope for is a speedy resolution. But I don't think, given the way it's panned out so far, I don't think that's going to be the case.
Yeah, it's a really, really tough one to get your head around. So, I mean, Tom, just briefly then, we have mentioned, obviously, Thomas Sandgaard, the rumours of this loophole or something. He's still very vocal on Twitter, even this evening, you know, asking people to change their profile picture to the Charlton badge to try and show they're still on his side as such. You know, telling people he's still very confident, he's not remotely lost hope, he's going to be at the game against Doncaster on Saturday. You know, I mean, we've been in this situation now where, you know, Thomas had hoped to get the deal over the line in the next few days for the last 3 weeks now. So I guess people's confidence on that front is probably going to start to falter, even if Thomas's hasn't. But it really feels like it's almost last chance saloon if we're going to be competitive this season, and it has to happen soon.
Yeah, I think proof will be in the pudding. And that's the same with any of these owners. You remember when Elliott first took over, in inverted commas, and put that statement out on the club website, and we did a show and we all said, well, I don't really care what he's saying on the club website, I want to see what he does as an owner. And we've seen how that's ended up. So it's the same for Sandgaard, who I don't put in that same category of people by any stretch at all. I haven't met him yet, but the way that he comes across, I think, and the way he's communicated to lots of people, he seems like the one hope that we have. But even with someone like him, proof will be if and when he does get his hands on the club, which we all still hope he does, it's then about what he does once he's in charge. And it's the same for any of them. And I think what the court case is showing at the moment is just that the people who do pertain to be owners or have some sort of stake or something to lose or some sort of grip over the club don't care about it in the slightest. And that's what's the most frustrating. And you talk about on the pitch, and I to a certain extent, I do agree. I think if we don't get signings over the line, we're going to be in trouble on the pitch this season. I don't necessarily think relegation unless we get administration as well. But as I say, to me, I almost am not fussed what happens on the pitch at the moment, because I'm more worried about the fact that there might not be a club at all, as Nave said earlier. And if you haven't got a club, there's nothing happening on the pitch anyway. So the idea of winning or losing a football match almost pales into insignificance. Again, something I said on Twitter earlier, I'm lucky enough to have got a ticket for Saturday's trial game against Doncaster. Obviously, I can't wait to go, can't wait to be back at the Valley and see the team. But at the same time, that whole game, I'm just going to be thinking, well, it doesn't really matter whether we win or lose here, because the bigger picture at stake here is whether we still have a club to support in a week or two. And I don't know, because I don't know enough about the legal aspects, I don't know if that's a possibility or not. But from the way people are talking, it's obviously not good news. And it's going to be a rocky couple of months again, just another couple of months on what's already been a rocky, well, however many years you want to call it, really. It's probably since Roland started owning the club. That's my head's a bit all over the place with it all at the moment. I'm still trying to kind of take today in and work out what it means. But I'm very, very worried about the future of the club, both on and off the pitch.
Yeah, certainly starting to get to a lot of people. I actually put the message out for asking people how they're feeling. At the moment in time, Will Boland says you need to breathe in and breathe out. Remember, it's always darkest before the dawn. Paul Turner was just sent a gif of Jim Carrey looking like he's about to throw up. So obviously not too good. A couple of people asking if we could get Sandgaard on this evening. I've been too busy today to even start trying to ask around for that. But he did speak to Richard on Twitter if you wanted to see that. We also had an email from Steve Hearn, who says, looks like we'll just have to write this season off. The Thomas Sandgaard miracle is slowly fading. And I am seeing a fair bit amongst the supporters of people who are getting frustrated with the fact it still hasn't gone over the line and starting to have doubts and questions. And obviously, I think that's only natural with all the disappointment we've had over the last few weeks. But, Thomas, for him, he still seems positive. And I guess that's something to cling on to. But, I'm sure everyone is just sitting there just worried about what's going to happen next. Anyway, I think we've covered that subject. Let's have a quick break. Let's talk about some football when we come back here on Charlton Live. It's a big match preview.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across. Bowers there. Pierce is there. Bowers header. And it's Charlie.
Yes! Oh, it's in!
Oh, he scores! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty! Woo! Dreamland! Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, Tom!
Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley!
Oh, my word! Oh, my word!
Charlton Live.
Right, welcome back to Charlton Live. This is the big match preview. As we heard at the top of the show, the highlights from the game over at London Stadium on Tuesday night. We were roundly beaten in the end, Nath, by West Ham United. But as Terry said, the scoreline didn't really tell the whole story. You know, we started off a decent little spell of possession. Went a couple of goals down in I think 22 or 26 minutes around that part as Sebastian Haller got two. I did want to see the first goal again, which I haven't had a chance to see a proper replay because it did look offside. But, you know, we went 2-0 down. But we actually ended that first half quite strongly and then came out really well in the second period. Had a number of chances. Chuksunike and Johnny Williams perhaps should have halved the deficit. And then there was just a late one added by Anderson late on. For West Ham that gave the scoreline a bit of gloss. But overall, you know, going into a game against a Premier League side who made 10 changes but still had a very strong side out there, I thought it was a performance to be proud of from the lads.
Yeah, of course. I mean, obviously, a London derby, you want to win it. But, I mean, if in hand on heart, you know, did we think we were going to win it? Well, I didn't. And, you know, Sebastian Haller, who scored the first two in quick succession, would he go West Ham for near enough 45 million? It's about the same that Roland wanted for the club. So it's a difficult one, really. But, I mean, yeah, you can't really expect them to go out and do something. But Bo said they look nervous in the game. And as you can expect, like Dylan played his first game. But, I mean, by all accounts, you know, in the second half, they got a bit more comfortable on the ball and looked a bit more... what's the word, you know, but a bit more, had a bit more purpose to them, and yeah. They obviously showed well. And but you've got, you know, you got, it was the Felipe Anderson. I mean, come on, players like that, they've got a great squad, they're just not obviously doing it in the Premier League. And obviously good to see Josh back. I still think he should be above Mark Noble in West Ham's team. Speaking to my West Ham mate the other day, and he's saying that he hopes that he gets a chance. But it was a free hit for us, and by, you know, we weren't disgraced by the sound of Boya.
Yeah, no, we weren't too bad in the game, Tom, or Lewis, actually. I'll bring you in at this point because, you know, there were certainly some standout performances. I mean, first of all, we should talk about that debutant Dylan Levert from Man United, Lewis. Bo said looked a bit nervy, but he did start to spray the ball around a little, you know, as the game wore on. What did you make of his first appearance in a Charlton shirt?
Yeah, I was impressed with him. I thought Bo was right in what he said. He looked a little bit nervous at the start. You forget how young he is, really. But once he sort of found his game a little bit, as you say, he was playing decent passes in. He looked comfortable in the midfield. And you think there's a lot of young lads in that side, really, that can take no shame from that at all. I think they competed in stages. I think we looked like we could have scored a goal or two in the second half. I thought Chuck's made a real difference when he came on as well. And again, Charlie Barker just has to take the plaudits for me. I thought he was fantastic again, bearing in mind the sort of calibre of player he's coming up against at 17 years of age. You know, he's only made his league debut a couple of days prior to that. And you're looking at him coming up against Sebastian Haller, Felipe Anderson, Manuel Lanzini. You know, these are players that have got plenty of Premier League appearances under their belts. And this is a boy who's just come through the youth academy as a scholar and is really impressing, and he's done himself no harm whatsoever. And overall, as you say, you're right. I think that the scoreline flattered West Ham completely. We need to be a little bit more clinical when it comes to our chances, but we've been saying that for quite a few seasons now, to be fair, let alone the opposition. And I was impressed. We can take some pride from it. It'll be a great experience for some of the lads, but ultimately, I think, especially given the situation we're in at the moment off the field and with the squad we have as well, I think going out of the cup competitions early, although we never want to lose a game, it's not the worst news in the world. I think we've got to focus on keeping that squad fit to compete in the league, and I think anything in the cup is going to come secondary this season.
Yeah, especially after it was Hull who scraped through against Leeds on penalties, so that would have been a pretty boring next round game anyway. Tom, it was a big 45 minutes from Chuksunike when he came on. Lee Bayer said afterwards that if Chooks could keep himself fit, he wouldn't be playing in League One. I mean, this is a big season for him, in my opinion. You know, he's already got a goal over in the League Cup game at Swindon. And like we say, if he is going to be an impact player from the bench, so be it. But you know, with Lyle Taylor gone, and obviously Matt Mack is still hopefully going to be scoring a few goals, it turned a bit down for him. Hopefully this will be a big season for Chooks.
Yeah, like you say, not just hopefully. I think it's going to have to be. It's a shame that he can't play more minutes. And you think of the start of last season, obviously at home to Stoke, away at Reading in particular, very strong performances. And we thought we had a bit of a player there, and then injuries obviously let him down. But I think he's come back, and I've only seen him in the flesh at the Swindon game this season, but he looked in much better shape, looked a little bit more trimmed down, a little bit leaner. Obviously took his goal well with a lovely turn and finish, although keeper might have expected to do a little bit better there. And I thought he was impressive again the other night. And I think it might be the case that we have to rely on him off the bench. But, you know, we're going to need those players in games, because there are going to be horrible games in this league where there are teams, you know, because we're a big fish at this level, irrespective of the actual squad that we've managed to put together at the moment. And I think there are going to be teams, especially when they come to the Valley, are going to park a lot of men behind the ball and soak up a lot of pressure, and we're going to have to try and break them down. So we're going to have to look for options off the bench. You know, players like, if Boya can get over his hatred of Albie Morgan, then maybe bringing him in for his creativity. People like Chucks, who, again, give a different option going forwards. We're going to need to be able to try different things like that. And as you say, it's a shame he can't stay fit. I quite like the idea of Bond through the middle with two players wide. So like the likes of Johnny Williams, Washington, Alfie, those sort of players. But I think Enike comes on and gives us a different dynamic up there. And yeah, obviously I'd like to see him play more minutes, but if he can come on at 60, 70 minutes and have the impact that he's started to have so far, then he could be a really important player for us. And I think he should be targeting probably getting to double figures as well this season.
Yeah, certainly. Obviously, Nath, I don't think we've really spoken enough about how well Alfie Doughty played on Tuesday night as well. Again, another really lively player, probably our most dangerous in the first half. You know, we've read in the Scottish press that we've turned down bids for him from Celtic, hoping that we'll be able to keep on to him. But you can see that the way he started this season, you can see why he's getting interest from slightly higher up the football pyramid.
Yeah, no, of course. I think if you cast your mind back, I think there was a game where me and you went to Bromley and he didn't have an amazing game, he played okay. And if you look back then, did I ever envisage him doing as well he has? No way. I mean, even when he first came in.
Don't try and put words in my mouth. I'm a football visionary like that.
But you could see he had raw talent. And but the thing for me, as he's played more games, he's obviously getting better. I think there's certain elements of his decision making last year which probably let him down in some games, which you expect. You know, he's still learning, he's still very young, he's still very raw, but obviously from what he's had a good start so far, and the games he's had, he's played really well. So, but I think trying to turn a negative into a positive is the situation at the moment. And is you look at the players are in and around the team, even if you look at the, you know, like James Vennins, and not saying they're going to be obviously first starters, but they know they get a chance, and we haven't really got much choice. But with Alfie, he's done so well, and he's played in so many positions. He's played as wing back, he's played probably kind of left back. He's an attacking player. He gives us something different, and I think in playing on that left, in a more of attacking state, it probably suits him a little bit more. But again, it's hard because you don't want to burn him out. But similar to Chucks, you know, we probably want to try and manage him a bit more. And not expect him to play every game, but Bowes ain't really got a choice. And I think it just tests the resolve of the club, whoever makes these decisions now, is just to hold the nerve and try and not let him go, because he's still learning, and I think he can learn a lot more under Bowes.
Yeah, I think we have to have another court case to work out who gets to make that decision at the moment. But anyway, we had an email in from Adam Cassidy as well. He said he's looking forward to fans being allowed back into the Valley this weekend. It's fantastic news and a positive step forward. The team will no doubt feel their presence. Sing loud and sing proud. Let them know you're there. Come on, you Reds. Then Adam says, Charlton put up a decent fight against a ludicrously expensive West Ham side that provided our youngsters with some priceless experience. I'm not disappointed about the result, as the league has to be our top priority. Cullen, again, prove what a fantastic young British player he is. West Ham will be mad not to utilise his talents. The boy is class. Today's court case was a disaster. Hopefully you have time to fit that one in. Yeah, we do, Adam. Obviously, we've spoken about that at the top of the show. Excellent email. Cheers for that, Adam. Right, let's hear from Lee Bowyer then. He did come and speak to the press over Zoom after the game over at West Ham. And he said he was reasonably proud of the display that his side put in.
Yeah, I think second half especially. I think the first half looked really nervous. 90% of our passes were going backwards. They was all so afraid of giving the ball away that it became a lot of negative play, you know. Half-time, I made a word with them and said, look, believe, like, you can play. And second half, I thought, tell me if I'm wrong, but I just said to the players, I thought we was the better side. I thought we looked the most dangerous. We looked like we was going to score more than what they did. The only thing that we was lacking, I would say, is that final pass, that final finish. That's what you pay for, though. So they get that chance at the end there, and then it kills the game. But for large parts of that second half, I thought we looked the better side and looked like the team that was going to score next.
Was it just that Premier League quality that told in the end then, do you think, this evening?
Yeah, because they get a chance and they take it. Or they get into a dangerous area in that final third and they pick out the right person and they make the right decision. That's what costs money. So they've got some good players in and around the box. They've got a lot of good footballers. And that was the difference, you know. They made the right decisions in the final third and we lacked that quality.
Tonight will certainly go down as a great experience, though, for some of the youngsters, like Dylan on his debut, and Charlie again, who's cramping up at the end there, but he's impressed. And I mean, Alfie Doughty as well, you know, a player who's got huge potential. I thought he was very good this evening as well.
You must have been listening to what I've just been speaking to the players, because I've just said exactly that. I said, like, you young lads, if anything, you've got to take this as a learning curve. Like, you've played against these players and you see what it takes, what they do. And this is what we need to do as young players is to improve. And they should take a lot away from that. Like Charlie, I said, I'm playing against Premiership centre forwards. 99% of them players will play in the Premiership this season. So they should all take something from it. Young Dylan, again, I think he started a little bit nervy, but you could see what he can bring to us. It's going to take him a little bit to settle in. I did say that. Alfie, like you said, he caused them problems. So, there's a lot of positives to take from tonight. Ignore the result. Like, ignore the 3-0 scoreline. It shouldn't really have been anyway. I think we deserve to score a goal. I think our performance, especially the second half, we deserve to get a goal.
You try and take some of those positives into the game on Saturday. I guess obviously playing against a Premier League team it can be quite tiring and take a lot out of a small squad. But you've got a few days to turn around for that Doncaster game now.
Yeah, they'll have rest tomorrow. And I said to them, like, ignore the score. The most important thing is Saturday. We're at home and we'll be ready. We'll be ready, and that's why I took Prattley off. That's why I took Johnny Williams off. That's why I took Macca off at half-time. Looking at the bigger picture, you know, Macca done nothing wrong. And he was a bit disappointed that he came off. And rightly so, because he never done nothing wrong. I've got to look at the bigger picture. I don't have a lot of plans. Did I want to take Prattley off? No, I didn't. I wanted to take Alfie off, because I was thinking, like, he looked a threat all night. But again, Johnny Williams, I know his record. I know the way he is. I have to look after him. So I could have took Ozzy off as well. There's loads of them that I could have took off. But the most important thing for me now is getting them ready for Saturday, and we will. Our preparation will be spot on. For the enemy's true, would you light the candles? Would you drink the wine? And would you tell my vision? What's the enemy's
Space on the right-hand side for Alfie Doughty now in the penalty area. This is a huge chance for the Alex, and it's Alfie Doughty who puts Charlton into the lead with a calm left-footed finish. It was a wonderful fall through to the youngster, and he pulled it in onto his left foot and slides it beyond the goalkeeper. It's crew Alexandra nil, Charlton Athletic 1.
Charlton Live.
Welcome back to Charlton Live, the big match preview, and well, absolutely brilliant news, as we heard in the email there from Adam, that fans can finally be back at the Valley. A test event is granted very late notice, and I have to say the club have clearly done brilliantly there to get that on, because of the 10 sides that were granted the permission to have these test events, well, three of them have pulled out since. So yeah, the approval came quite late from the government / the EFL, but you know, Charlton are one of those teams who clearly done their homework, and so well done to all the staff behind the scenes, and I'm sure all the fans who have got tickets are extremely grateful. We're lucky that we've got a couple on the call, so Tom and Lewis are both going to be there Saturday. Lewis, it's going to be strange, I guess. It's going to be an unusual one, because obviously there will be only 1,000 there. It's going to be, well, slightly more than some of the Checker Trade Trophy games we've played, but it's going to be a weird atmosphere. But it's just great just that we're going to have some atmosphere back in the stadium.
100%, and great for people as well that have managed to get tickets. And you know, I feel very lucky that I'll get to be there. It'd be great to see the lads live again. You know, it's been tough, and I think people probably under. I'll never take for granted again, really, how much I appreciate going to watch my football club at a weekend, because you blow off so much steam from, you know, your everyday life stresses at the football. I feel very grateful to be going back, and it's a real, you know, huge well done to everybody at the club that's managed to turn it around in the short space of time that they were given to do so, because I imagine that the protocols in place take a lot of planning, and to get a seating plan set up that's COVID secure and everything would have taken a hell of a lot of time. So they deserve a huge amount of credit for getting this ahead and making it possible. I think it's a fitting time to go back as well, you know, against Doncaster. We all know what happened the last time we played them there. There were slightly more than 1,000 people in the stadium at the time, but it'll be great. And I think after this week as well, you know, Bowyer and the players probably will be feeling a little bit deflated after today. So any kind of boost for them will be great going into this game. And I think having, albeit a minimal amount of fans in the stadium, it's still going to make a huge difference. And I'm really looking forward to getting back and seeing the inside of the Valley, because I think I've been outside it a few times in lockdown, but it'll be great to get back inside.
Well, did you ever have any concerns, Tom, before you booked your ticket? You know, were there any worries about going back and being in a crowd again? Obviously, the fact that Nathan has to stay in quarantine is one thing off your mind, but was there anything that made you second thoughts? Was there anything that the club have said that made you think, no, this will be well organised, I'm going to be happy that they've looked after our needs here?
None of that, really. It might be naive, but none of it even crossed my mind. The moment there was an opportunity to go back, I was like, I'm going to do it. And I've been to a couple of things, and even things like when you go to the pub when they reopened, I've seen how much effort has to go into arranging things to make things COVID friendly and secure and with all the new guidelines and everything. And look, we all know Charlton, we've all been around the club a long time. You know that they'll have put the groundwork in to make it very, very safe. And no, like I say, call me naive, but I hadn't worried about it particularly. But it's obviously they need to get it right, and it's going to have implications across the whole football league, because obviously the whole point of it, it's as it says, it's a trial event. So they are going to be taking the information from events like this and working out whether more fans can come back. And obviously Bowyer, as he said, can't wait to have fans back. It's going to be a weird atmosphere, as you say, because everyone's going to be spread out and there's not going to be many of us there. But I think to be part of that and hopefully to try and get more fans back into the ground is the most important thing. But no, I'm not worried at all. I think that the staff there will do a brilliant job. It was very easy to do. You can see that the seats are going to be segregated, so I'll probably be sat miles away from anybody anyway, which will be weird. Especially if a goal goes in at the last minute and you want to run down to the front and celebrate, and then some steward has to tell you to stay back or whatever. So it's going to be a very odd experience, I think, but I'm looking forward to it. And just getting back to the Valley will be nice, because it's a sense of normality, and That's the part of the club that we want to be talking about a bit more often, don't we, at the moment? And unfortunately, we can't. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to going back.
Yeah, Nathan, how much of a boost do you reckon it will be for the team? You know, obviously there won't be any away fans, so we'll be the only ones making any form of atmosphere, even if there is 1,000 people dotted around. Do you think that will play a big part in the performance on Saturday?
It can. I think it's obviously nice, even though since they come back, it'd be a nice change to have some sort of atmosphere. Probably ain't going to be at the higher end of the decibel meter, if you want to call it that. But I think it'll be a nice change for the players, even come out for a warm up just to have some sort of interaction with 2 meters away or whatever it is. I think it'll be, like Tom said, it's some sense of normality coming back into it, and you could try and use that to say, well, this is the start, hopefully it can get better and things will get back to normal. So there ain't no away fans. I don't think they'd bring much anyway, Doncaster, did they? So I think it'd be good for the players. It'd be nice to see some faces in and around the club.
Excellent stuff. Right, let's have a look ahead to the game itself then. Doncaster Rovers coming down to the Valley. Obviously, Charlton on the back of their opening day win at Crewe Alexandra. Donny, shared a 1-1 draw with Milton Keynes last week. Obviously, we know about them a couple of years ago. Very good side. They've gone through a number of changes since then. It's a tough one, isn't it, Tom? At this early stage in the season, it's quite hard to really gauge a level for an opponent.
I'm not really sure, to be honest with you, because, as you say, they're a team that we've obviously come up against a fair amount over some big games over the last few years, but there's been a lot of turnover of players and that sort of thing. So it's a difficult one, really. I know that, obviously, they, as you said there, they got their draw with Milton Keynes. And it's just so early on in the season, really, to work out what a team is all about. You think back to last season. We obviously beat Blackburn on the opening day. You look at where they finished compared to us. We obviously then beat Stoke at home and then went away to them later on in the season and got trounced by almost a completely different side. Not in terms of personnel, but the way they played. So, yeah, it's a really difficult one. I think from looking at it from a chart perspective, I'm expecting us to hopefully be on the front foot a little bit more. Obviously, being back at home, even without fans, I think would be a bonus. But to have some fans in the ground, we've really got to try and harness that. Because like Nate says, there's not going to be a huge atmosphere. You know, he's not going to be down there singing his heart out for us. So it is going to be weird. I don't know if the drummer will be in as one of the tickets, for example, or whether he can even bring it. So it's going to be a strange atmosphere. But if they can harness any of it, then that might help as well. And as I say, really, it's so early on in the season. It's just about figuring out where we are as a club more than who we're playing and the opposition. But having said that, I'm sure Bowyer will have done his homework. He'll know what to expect and he'll get them ready. It's the difficult thing, really, is that we still played a fairly strong side on Tuesday night and we obviously can't rotate a lot. And it's too early in the season, I think, to be worrying about players getting tired. But the longer that this goes on with the small squad we've got, that's something we're going to have to think about, because with the shortened season as it is, games are just going to keep coming thick and fast, aren't they? So be interesting to see who he selects and how he manages the side over the game. It's one I would expect, and I said it last time we were down in this league, I would expect us to go out and give any team in this division a good run for their money, and I'd probably back us as the favourite in the majority of games. That might be wrong, but that's the way I see the games at this level, because I think we should be pushing for the top six places for definite.
Do you reckon there's a chance for Dylan Levitt, Nathan, Saturday? Obviously, he got his debut against West Ham play in midweek. You know, there's potential, you know, if Prattley goes back into the midfield and Charlie Barker maybe would get the day off, and then we could sort of work around that and put Levitt in that midfield. There's a tiny bit of room for manoeuvre for Bowyer to play with.
Yeah, I think so. I think Jake and Alex would probably go straight in, I would imagine. And then I would imagine it would probably be maybe Ozzy or Johnny to go above them in as a three. But it wouldn't surprise me if Levitt does come in. But he did. I think he played 90 on Tuesday, didn't he? So I think looking at the game on Tuesday, it was quite obvious the people he was going to start. I think, like Tom said, I think we probably will be the favourites I thought MK were unfortunate not to win. I think they got a late goal, didn't they? And I looked at it on, when was I looking at it? Wednesday. It was apart from Sunderland. I think Sunderland had like 70-odd% possession and 20-odd shots and drew one all late. But MK Dons had 65% possession and 10 more shots than Donny. So I think we probably will be the favourites. And I think with Levitt in there, he gives us that little bit of another dimension. You can either play him at home and he gets on the ball a lot more, or even if you're protecting a lead, you know, he's not going to lose the ball very well, you know, very often. You know, obviously Nicky Butson is one of the greatest passers that they had in sort of Man United at the sort of youth level. So it'll be interesting how he plays out. But looking at the people that played on Tuesday, I'd be surprised if he does start. But if he, you know, if he doesn't, there's like he's going to get games. It's not like we've got a massive squad, as everyone knows. So if it's not this weekend, you know, he'll get loads of games this season. And he's still, you know, hasn't been away from Man United, so he's still got to bed in and get used to what we want him to do and stuff like that. So it'll be interesting how Bo lines up.
Yeah, and I guess one more question there is do we think Johnny Williams starts? Because obviously he didn't at Crewe, but you know we've seen him getting more minutes again as the weeks progress. So is he one of those players that we're only going to ever throw on from the bench these days, or is he going to get the chance to start as well?
I think he deserves a chance to start. Whether Bo will want to line up the same way he started at Crewe last weekend remains to be seen. I think, you know, Bon had a fairly decent game last Saturday. Chucks when he came on as well. I think it's going to be interesting to see how he lines up. And obviously with Johnny's injury record as well, I think Boya said before, really, you've got to look after him. He's always thinking, you know, with Johnny and with Chucks, really, that you've got to take into account their injury records and that they wouldn't be playing at this level if they were fitter, you know, and they didn't have such bad luck with injury. So it'd be interesting to see if Johnny does get a start. You know, I've been impressed with Ozzy as well, whether he would maybe start the game and then Johnny would come on in the second half. But it's just where he would fit into that in the midfield at the moment. I mean, Alfie's been playing further forward on the left wing. We've been sort of looking a bit more flat in the midfield with Albie, and George has been playing quite a bit as well. And it just depends really where we can get him in, and whether he does see him at the moment as more of an impact. Because if you're a retiring League One defender late in the second half and you've got someone with the pace and skill of Johnny Williams coming on at you, it's going to be an immediate threat. And I think it's just a case of watching his condition really and seeing how he takes, because he hasn't played a lot of football really when you think about it, and he had a lot of last season out as well. So I'd love to see him in the starting 11, because I think he's going to be a really important player for us this year, and he has been over the last couple of seasons since he's come in. But unfortunately with Johnny, it does come with that tag that his injuries can hamper his progress a little bit and his consistency within the side. So we'll have to see how it goes, but I'd like to see him start. I think it'd be a positive move if he did.
Excellent stuff. Right, let's have some predictions then as we come to the end of the show. So I want you guys to go in order. I want Tom, Nathan, then Lewis. Give us your quick fire predictions.
3-1 Charlton.
2-0 Charlton.
3-1 Charlton.
Lovely stuff. Another clean sweep. And when we had one last week, you're all correct that we went on to win the game. I think Tom got the score exactly correct last week. So excellent stuff. Right, we've come to the end of this week's big match preview. Just, you know, we had some sad news actually during the week. I want to pass my condolences on to the family of Chris Thompson, or Dr. Kish, or Ketz, you may have known him as, who sadly passed away suddenly on Tuesday. Used to chat with Chris outside games quite a lot, and many Charlton fans knew who he was, and they'll be very sad to hear of his passing. So our condolences to his friends and his family. Right, guys, thanks to Nathan, to Tom and to Lewis for joining me on the show.
Cheers, boys.
Cheers, Lou. Cheers, everyone.
Cheers, guys. I've been Louis Mendes. Thank you for listening to Charlton Live, the big match preview. We'll be back with a podcast on Sunday to look back at the game against Doncaster, and we look forward to speaking to you then. See you later. We'll be right back.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.